Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live this morning from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson with you, taking you up until 10 o'clock. Your Titans calls after last night's charade, 737-1025. So let's get back into this game, and we can take it many different ways. Plenty of blame to go around, but it's just staggering to me, guys, that one quarterback was making his second career start. The other guy was in year five as the second overall pick. If you were dropped off last night in Jacksonville, Florida, from Pluto, you wouldn't have known which quarterback was making career start two and which other guy's been around for 5 years.
Yeah, you can say that.
One guy didn't get touched, literally, didn't get touched.
Fair point.
Yeah, but, I mean, Gardner Minshew is – he has this moxie, this swagger about him.
He likes to wrestle whales.
Yeah,
he plays like
he played under Mike Leach, like he was in a Mike Leach offense. He just has that. He has that thing about him that there's not a bad play to him. He's kind of like Baker Mayfield. There's never a bad play. Like, I can make a play. There's never really a bad play. I'm extended, and I'm going to find a guy. Yesterday, he moved around. He moved around in the pocket as if he was a veteran. He did. He moved around. He had some drops on third down.
He had one in the end zone.
I said before the game, he's not the reason that Jacksonville was 0-2. Because he played well. Yeah. You can call him check downs. You can call him whatever they want to. But he played well.
So, stylistically, let me ask you this. Because I was trying to figure out who he reminds me of as I was watching last night. Because I watched him all through college, and he had this mustache cult of personality at Washington State. Again, he tried to go to Bama, didn't work. He transferred up to Washington State and had this one fantastic year where he's a cult hero in Pullman, Washington. The Palouse, they had game day there for the first time ever because of him last year. And I'm trying to figure out who he reminds me of. And I think there's a little bit of Baker Mayfield to his game because he's sort of the same size. He also has an incredibly thick lower body. Like, he's just built really, really well. Does he remind you at all stylistically from early Drew Brees? At all, just because he's a little shorter.
The way he moves around the pocket.
He slings it. He moves good feet. Like, does it remind you at all of that, or am I out in left field on that one?
I mean, I'm sure you can find some similarities with that. He reminds me more of, and I'm just thinking of quarterbacks now. I'm in the present. He does remind me of Baker Mayfield. He has this moxie about him. He has this thing about him where he doesn't care what you think. He's just going to go out there and he's going to run the offense the way the offense is supposed to be ran, and he's going to do it with flair. He's going to move around the pocket. He's not going to give you a good shot on him. He's going to find a guy open. Now, whether they catch it or not, that's up to them. He made a few bad throws yesterday.
Mostly.
But basically the whole game, they were catchable balls that he was throwing. And I know it was frustrating to the Titans defense and to the Titan coaches that this guy played that well, and he was the reason why Jacksonville won. He was one of the reasons why Jacksonville won, because he played like a veteran quarterback. He didn't play like a rookie. He played like a veteran quarterback.
We talked about this. Who makes the mistake and who doesn't is who's going to win. And Marcus didn't make the big
Marcus
turnover.
The
mistake was Dory Jackson. That was the big error that the team mentally who's going to make the big error? Well, we thought if the Titans didn't make the big error and you forced Minshew to making the mistake, that you could win the game. And the big error was made by the fourth year, third year corner, who's a first round draft pick, not the sixth round pick at quarterback making his first career start like that, or second career start like that is. It wasn't Minshew. And again, the other thing, he also didn't drop back and sling it around for like 4,000 yards last night. He was not touched at all the entire game, and the defense still shut down the Jags offense for the better part of what? They scored how many points? Six points after the six-minute mark in the first quarter?
They were 2-for-11 on third down.
Titans had more first downs. Titans had more yards. Titans had more time of possession. The defense for the Titans played really well last night. They shut after the 14-0 lead, which again, half of that was a huge mistake from Adoree Jackson. Mm-hmm. The defense locked them down. They were four 3 and outs, and there should have been a fifth 3 and out But the pass interference call was atrocious on, I think it was Malcolm Butler maybe. And, again, on Twitter, Vrabel, why aren't you challenging? Why aren't you challenging? And, you know, Vrabel's standard answer on that has been pretty clear. I don't think they're going to pick up flags unless it's so obvious. So he doesn't want to challenge those plays. He's made that clear.
I agree with him.
Right.
I don't necessarily disagree with him either. Yeah. It's a risky challenge, yep. But on that particular play, that's a third down, and you're late in the game. Maybe it's worth the risk at that point. That's one where I thought maybe it's worth the risk, just because it didn't look like a pass interference, and it resulted in essentially a turnover. So that's one. You know, the Colts game, it's different. It's in the second quarter. It's early in the game. You got a lot of timeouts you need to use. Whatever. That one was a little different. It was a terrible call. The refs were bad last night too. Let's be clear. That's not the reason the Titans lost the game.
Well, they're making
football, but the refs were bad,
unwatchable. I mean, to the point where Tom Brady is on Twitter saying, "All right, I'm out. I'm done watching. Thanks, refs. You're killing the game for us."
Well, I get what you guys are saying, the refs and making calls, but ultimately, man, it comes down to the players making plays. The refs didn't stop the whole game. There were calls, and you got to understand too, this crew that was reffing this game, they should have known. They were the highest crew in regards to calling holding calls, offensive holding calls. This crew had the highest percentage of offensive holding calls than any other crew. So you knew coming into the game, you were breached on it. Like, this crew calls a lot of holding calls, so be careful.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to – damn what Tom Brady said. I'm not going to sit here and say – you know, it was the refs. They were horrible. Refs are horrible every week, if you ask players, because they miss calls
and
everything.
But at some point,
it's not the reason. We're not saying it's the reason the Titans are losing.
I mean, can we play the game of football?
Well, if it's a holding call,
it's a physical sport.
But
let's go.
Yeah. But clearly, and they pointed this out on the broadcast last night. Again, if you missed the number, I think it was 64% that through 2 weeks in a game, that the holding calls across the league are up 64% from last year.
They want you to stop holding.
That's changing the game, though. That's physically, as a ref, as a league, you have decided to emphasize this. Fine. It is going to change the game. And it has changed because you can call holding on every play. And so when you see a tiny little guy, you know, it's one thing if you're dog collaring a defensive lineman and you hook him with an arm and you tackle him. Like, sure. Like the penalty where Adam Humphreys, they rolled Mariota to the right. They were in the red zone. It ended up being a Derrick Henry touchdown. Mariota rolls to the right. He ends up getting down to, like, the one-yard line. But they called a holding penalty because Adam Humphreys was about to go to the slot, and the guy just tackled him. Like, it's obvious holding. You got to call it. But there were so many other ones. On both sides of the ball, there's I think the numbers were something like 170 holding calls through two weeks versus 100 last year. Like,
but don't you think
the percentages are way too askew?
Don't you think if they call however many holding calls they called in this game, don't you think there were like triple the amount of calls they did make, probably even more than that, holding calls they did make, that they kind of like, okay, we just let it go.
So what do we? I agree with you, but so then what's the solution?
Like,
what are we making football then?
Here's the thing.
Like, what is it going to teach people to do?
Fans, you can't worry about that. Just watch the game. Are you going to stop watching because they call and holding calls?
Tom Brady did.
Well, who cares what Tom Brady does? But he has a big mansion. He has his wife. He was tapping him to go to bed anyway. He had to practice Friday.
I'll tell you this much. I was ready. If it wasn't for my job and having to actually watch that game, I would have turned it off, and I would have put Houston and Tulane on,
which is a great
ESPN
game,
which was a 28-14 game at the half, and I didn't see a second of it. But I'm just willing to bet it was far more entertaining than that product was last night.
You know what? Yeah. Absolutely right, Nick, but it wasn't because of the holding calls. If I didn't have to watch that Titan game, I wouldn't have watched. After 14 points, I knew it was going to be an ugly game. I knew the Titans weren't going to score many points. I would have if I didn't have to watch it, I'd have turned it off. It had nothing to do with the holding calls.
Nobody showed up to the game. The weather stunk. Both teams were awful. The referees were a disgrace.
Yeah, put it all together.
That was a three-hour crap show from top to bottom.
Yeah, but again, Tom Brady, I'm not going to just eliminate Tom Brady's opinion on this because he does speak for a lot of us. And again, if the numbers were different, I wouldn't care about Tom Brady. But if the numbers are telling you that the NFL is calling this play significantly differently than it's ever called it before, they are fundamentally changing the way the game is being executed. And why are they doing that? To slow it down, to create more. Remember the NHL went through this with the whole
NFL is not trying to slow the game up.
Right. Like, no,
they're
no,
not trying to
no,
slow
no, no.
it up.
But it does until they learn to stop holding, and then it's supposed to open it up, right? Like, that's what happened with the NHL. They were going to call interference a lot more, so they called a bunch of penalties a lot more on people, and then people learned, and then it opened it up. And
do you think Tom Brady, do you think if New England is playing, I don't know, let's say the Titans. New England's playing the Titans. And Tom Brady is sitting on the sideline, and he see holding calls, and they call holding four times in a row. You think Tom Brady's going to say, man, I'm out of here. I'm not even going to play anymore.
Well, that's an unreasonable.
He's not going to do it. You know why? Because it's being called for his team.
Well,
that's why he's not going to say anything. So,
right, but he was a viewer last night,
Tom Brady.
He was a viewer.
And his opinion is, you take his opinion and you can take it because what he's been through, and I respect that part. But I'm not going to sit here and say, well, it was because of the refs that I'm checking out of a game. No, it's not because of the refs that I'm. If that's the case, I would have checked out of a lot of games.
That's your opinion.
I would have checked out a lot of games this year and last year. But it was because it was bad football play that I wanted to check out.
All right, coming up later on in the show this hour, we're going to talk to our buddy Teron Davenport. Normally it's 7:30. He is on a flight back to Tennessee, so we'll talk to him somewhere between 7:30 and 7:45. But right now, let's talk with you, 615-737-1025. John in Nashville is next on Morning Drive. John, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, guys? As always, thanks for taking my call. I called in Monday, and I made the comment that Malcolm Butler's been beat every week since the Philly game last year. D-Major's rebuttal to that was T.Y. Hilton's the Titan killer. I understand that. However, D.J. Chark Jr. is not. You know what he is? He's a rookie, and he beat Malcolm Butler again last night. Second point, shortly after we go down 14-0, we send Delanie Walker in motion to run a sweep to Jonnu Smith for a gain of 2 yards. That's awful. Third point, and I'll let you guys respond. The offensive line was almost JV league-ish. They looked like they didn't care. They didn't have any spunk about them. If Marcus Mariota got sacked, you hardly saw anybody helping him up. I don't know what to do as a Titans fan. And I'll hang up the list. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, John.
Persevere? I don't know.
Said this yesterday.
Hey, John,
one
go
of the
try
things,
out.
One of the things to watch was DJ Chark.
Yeah.
He had a touchdown, I think, over 70 yards.
I mean, he's right.
But Butler's weird. Like,
yeah.
He makes a really great
Butler
play and then gets
plays
beat. You're
and
like,
then
what?
Get beat. I mean, it's going to happen to a defensive back. It's how you respond. I like his demeanor, and I like his swagger, because just because he gets beat, it doesn't mean he goes into a shell. He's going to come back there. He's going to fight. Unlike his counterpart, Jackson, totally different.
And he had a couple of nice deflections.
Yeah,
I mean, he had a couple of nice plays last
year. Right.
Really good open field tackle on Leonard Fournette.
You're right. He got beat. You're right about the offensive line. And when Taylor comes back, that's not solving their problems, people. I think people think that, and Taylor, and I said this yesterday, and I will continue to beat the Taylor Lewan drum. He is arguably top three left tackle in the National Football League. He might be the best left tackle in the National Football League. You can ask some, they say yes. But Taylor Lewan is not Superman. Taylor Lewan can't stretch his arms and be all five offensive linemen. He just can't do it. He's going to do what he does on the left side. But he can't make up for Saffo, for Ben Jones, for Douglas, whoever else they want to throw in there, or for Conklin. Yeah. He can't make up for those guys. So when he comes back, don't just think it's, oh, Taylor walks in here, we're fine now, everybody. We can really turn into this explosive offense. Marcus is not going to get sacked anymore.
There will be a different feel.
It's not going to change a lot.
If they find a way to win next week against Atlanta, and I don't think they will, but then again, I've picked them wrong every single game this year. Yeah. I thought they would lose to Cleveland, beat Indy, and beat Jacksonville. I've been wrong every step of the way. If they beat Atlanta and get Lewan back after the 1 month, 2-2, there's a totally different feel, right? It's like a feeling of you survive, now let's go.
Yeah, and I think the hope is, and this is just all you can do right now as a Titans fan, the hope is that Lewan fixes not one but two positions. He fixes the left tackle position by himself.
And a guard.
But hopefully then that gives you another body to play somewhere else. You know, ideally, I don't know if they would go Dennis Kelly or Conklin at left guard. Conklin does not want to play guard. We know that. But I don't know what other choice you have at this point, because whoever else you put in at right guard is completely unacceptable. So if Dennis Kelly helps upgrade the right guard position. Again, this is just the hope. I'm not saying it's going to happen. The hope is that Taylor Lewan fixes not one but two positions on the line. And then you're still looking at Roger Saffold struggling in pass protection, Ben Jones struggling in general for the second year in a row. Why you cut Corey Levein is still doesn't make sense to me.
Nick, was this offensive line last year with Taylor Lewan good?
No, not really.
Okay. That's no. all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, Titans calls when we come back. 737-1025. Jump aboard. 737-1025. Live from Kitchen Notes. Your calls after this on ESPN 1025 The Game. It is Morning Drive live this morning from Kitchen Notes. ESPN 1025 The Game. We're down here at the Omni Nashville Hotel. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise coming to your calls in just 1 second. 737-1025. And we've been talking about the offensive line. Certainly a deplorable performance from that group last night. But what about the fact that Nate Davis, the third-round pick in this year's draft class, is a healthy scratch inactive, and the guys that are starting ahead of him couldn't block Chase McCabe?
Yeah,
well, what does that say about Nate Davis right now?
It could
bust,
be
a,
yeah.
Can't bust a grape.
It could be an indictment on Nate Davis. I don't know.
Or they, John Robinson.
Yeah, John Robinson evaluating him as a college prospect, a pro prospect.
The right guard position is a mess. And we have not talked, one person we've not talked about as well is Arthur Smith. We got to get to that as well because that's a part of this equation as well.
Yeah. Right. This team is just I don't know. And I know it's a long season, and they're not even finished with a quarter of the season. I know it's a long season, but I don't see where the problems that they have, I don't see if they can – I don't know if they can fix them this year.
So you're not talking anybody off the ledge at all. You're saying jump.
I'm saying stay there for a while.
For a while.
Yeah, just stay there
think
for a while.
Think about it.
Think about it, yeah. I'm not telling you to jump, but I'm saying stay there for a while and think about it.
Oh,
I don't think the – I don't know – if these problems are fixable, because here's the thing. There were a lot of coverage sacks, too.
Yeah.
There were a few. Yep. There were like three or four coverage sacks.
Yep. Dudes were not open.
And that tells me guys are not getting open. Either guys are not getting open or Marcus is not seeing a one or the two. But they don't separate. None of those receivers separate whatsoever. They don't play big. I know they're going against there's a secondary that's one of the best in the National Football League, but there was no separation with nobody, really. And if the quarterback doesn't trust you enough to throw it when it's tight coverage, I mean, what do you think? If he doesn't trust you enough to throw it to you when you're open, do you think he's going to throw it to you when it's tight coverage?
I told you, it's a complete team.
Yeah. Complete disaster. 737-1025, the number. Adam is next on Morning Drive. Adam, you go ahead.
Man, I've never disagreed with Derek Mason in my whole life. It's the only time. But I do disagree that there were dudes open last night, man. He just doesn't see them. He doesn't read it. Why in my right mind would I call you guys last year and go start Blaine Gabbert? I'm not crazy. I've been following these dudes forever. I wouldn't just say start Blaine Gabbert because I think Gabbert's awesome or I own his jersey. It's because Marcus can't read a defense, man. This ain't new. This is a perpetual problem, and he's not going to get better. It's kind of like when Jeff Fisher said, hey, we're going to stick with Kerry Collins until the wheels fall off, because he realized Vince had peaked, and it wasn't good. So it's the same thing to me, man, the same story. Week four, I'm calling for Tannehill, and
Adam,
I hate it. Calling for Tannehill. But
we don't blame you.
Yeah, I got to call for Tannehill, dude, because – Marcus has peaked, man. He took awful sacks last night. Tripping over your own lineman was like the last straw.
Oh,
for me.
Give me Adam. Hang up on Adam. I love you, Adam.
Butt,
you're done.
The butt
you're
fumble. Done. It's kind of like the butt
you're
fumble.
Done. There are some sacks last night you put on Marcus, no question. There are sacks against the Colts you put on Marcus, no question. He has been sacked 17 times in 3 games. That is the most in the NFL over that stretch in 2 decades. Do not tell me this is all on the quarterback. The coordinator is guilty of not running the right plays. The offensive line is atrocious, and the quarterback has taken some sacks. All of it is true. The sack where he steps up in the pocket and Jack Conklin gets thrown into him is not Marcus's fault. Some of them are his fault. I'm not suggesting that he is innocent in this. But don't tell me that 9 sacks and 17 in 3 games is all the quarterback's fault. That's just ridiculous.
What did I say for months on this show? they are the most risk-averse franchise I have ever seen. And you want to know why they're risk-averse? Because they hire Arthur Smith to be the offensive coordinator. Well, he's been in the system for 8 years. You know, he worked his way up as a tight ends coach. They don't go out and get playmakers. What did I say all offseason? They need game changers. They need guys that can separate down the field. That's why I wanted Amari Cooper last October before he got traded. That's why I wanted that basket case who's now in New England. They have no game changers. They're the most risk-averse franchise. They spent $36 million on Adam Humphries, who does nothing.
Had a good game last night, by the way.
Whatever.
Finally.
He won a highlight, but one out of three. Roger Saffold gets knocked on his butt. The highlight of the offseason moves has been Cameron Wake, who at any moment, Father Time could say, you're done.
Well, he 17 snaps, I think, against the Colts. I think he only had 24, I think, last night. So, again, he's not on the field a lot. But that's, you know, that's sort of the design there. The Arthur Smith thing is a part of this equation we have not discussed a lot, and so we need to spend some time on that. But
let's do it right now.
We got some guys on hold, and if you want to get into Arthur Smith, we can. I just think it's, like you said, conservative, risk-averse approach when they hired him. And the only question, we know he's good with the players. We know he's good. He's got a lot of respect, and players like dealing with him and listening to him. We sort of, that was the thing about him, and he knows all the guys, and he's really close with the team and all that stuff. The question I had the second he was hired and the question I had all offseason was, you do not know if a guy's got it when it comes to play calling until you're in the situation on Sundays, or in this case Thursdays. And I still don't know if we know anything about that. He was really good against Cleveland. The game plan schemed around their weaknesses, and he stuck with the run, and they were able to stick with the run because they had the lead. They had to get away from Derrick Henry last night in the fourth quarter because of the situation. But I'm seeing the same plays that I saw against Cleveland. I'm seeing the same plays that we saw against Indianapolis. We're seeing the same plays. We're not seeing any, you know, innovation, reactiveness. Like, we're not seeing any changes. It was very predictable last night when they were – when it was – there was a, I can't remember what the play was, but there was like a third and 18, and they needed like 9 yards to get into field goal range. And – they threw a bubble screen to a wide receiver, and every single player on the Jacksonville Jaguars read the play perfectly. And you're going, like, that can't all be the offensive line or the quarterback or the receiver. There has to be an element of scheme being unpredictable, and it was very predictable last night.
Whether you're predictable and unpredictable, it boils down to the guys executing a play the way it's supposed to be played. Execute it. You know, it's if – I call a play, and Heimerdinger would say this, if I call a play and you make it work, I'm seen as a great offensive coordinator. If I call a play and it doesn't work and you don't do what you're supposed to do, then I'm considered, why did you hire this guy? He's a bum. He can't call plays. What are you doing? I am not Arthur Smith. They knew he's doing exactly what they want him to do. He's catering toward an offense that's not explosive. Okay, they can be explosive in a run game. They can with Derrick Henry. He's proven that. But they're not an explosive pass, a passing team, which means he has to design his offense based upon the personnel that he has. The receivers going to those guys, I think they are good. I would never say that these guys are bums. I wouldn't call because I know how hard I know how hard these guys work. I know what it takes to play at this level. I'm not going to be like some guys, you know, that's they're bums. They're this.
Sucks.
No, they're not.
Sucks.
They're not. But they're not. One thing, they're not explosive. They don't have that one guy
You said about how hard they work. What? I'm not going to give them credit for
I'm not giving them credit for working hard, but I'm not going to sit here and say this group, they're bombs. They can't play. They can play, but they don't have that thing that's going to separate them
but here's the thing,
from everybody
that's
else. They
the
don't have
team.
That explosiveness
if that's the
in
whole
their
team.
Game.
If you're starting Tajay Sharp, you have an issue.
Because Tajay is a third guy. If he had a really, truly good number one like Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, then he would be a much better number two. Or A.J. Brown would be a much better number two. But all those receivers, even Adam Humphries, all of them are the same. Tell me something different about them except the color of their skin and the height.
None of them separate.
Exactly. There's nothing other than Adam Humphries might have a little bit more wiggle to his game than everybody
and
else.
And after the catch, Corey Davis and A.J. Brown maybe are a little bit more physically
close. But
they
all are
Tajay Sharpe probably has the best hands.
Yeah, they all, they all are the same guy. They all run the same routes. They all do the same thing. Nobody separates themselves. Yeah. You can't look at one guy and say, okay, that's my deep threat guy. That's the guy that's going to take the top off the defense. That's the secondary shifter. Nobody. Delanie Walker's the secondary shifter. That's a damn shame.
At this point.
737-1025 is the number. We'll come back. More of your calls. Austin, Ron, everybody on hold. Hang tight. We'll get your thoughts and perspective on last night's Titans game. 737-1025. And then hopefully we touch base with our buddy Teron Davenport before we wrap up this hour. Live from Kitchen Notes on ESPN. 1025 The Game. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from Kitchen Notes, Omni Nashville Hotel. Coming up a little later in the show, once we cool off and tail off, Derek Mason is going to be giving some dating advice.
Yes.
Can people buy tickets
to
this?
Yeah, you can buy tickets,
all right, we'll tease that for later.
We will lighten the mood.
Cannot wait for that.
Coming up in a little bit. Hopefully our buddy Teron Davenport is available in about 15 minutes as he's getting off of a flight from Jacksonville to Nashville. But your calls, 737-1025, Titans-Jaguars last night. Let's hear from you. Austin is next on Morning Drive. Austin, you go ahead.
Hey, I'm honestly just sick and tired of year in and year out really not protecting Marcus. I mean, you keep blaming Marcus for this. He's really the scapegoat. You blame him for everything. But we don't really have an offensive line, and it's like, John Robinson has done nothing to help. I mean, he signed Stafford in the offseason, but so far it's been a bust. But I don't understand why people are calling for a change in quarterback. Like, people magically think that if we change quarterback, you know, Ryan Tannehill is going to go in there and light it up. It's same old offensive line, and LaJuan didn't help by getting himself suspended. But
well,
no quarterback
would succeed with the offensive line playing like it did last night. But if they do patch things together and get it more respectable like it was the first two games, if you do change quarterbacks at some point this year, what's the first thing we always see when a quarterback change happens? There's like this injection of energy. There's a spark.
Unless he sucks. Yeah, which
Tannehill could.
Here's the thing. He pointed it out. What did he do in the offseason, John Robinson, to fix the offensive line? He spent $44 million on Roger Saffold and a third-round pick on Nate Davis. Mm-hmm. And what are they getting back for those two investments so far?
Zilch.
So far. Now, a good run blocker. But Quentin Spain was a good run blocker who couldn't pass protect. So I don't know if he's that big of an upgrade yet. Now, again, more and more of this start is hanging around Taylor Lewan's neck. Now, we'll find out what it looks like when he's back. And if they are much better when he is back, then we can point to their failures and say, well, Taylor Lewan, the best player on the team, not being out there was a big factor in this. If they struggle and they're like last year and he's out there the whole time, and they're terrible, then it's not necessarily all on Taylor Lewan. It's about John Robinson's decisions on how to fix the issue because they weren't working or they have not worked. And $44 million in a third-round pick are not small assets. Those are large assets for an NFL team.
So clearly you're saying two of the last three games, obviously the Taylor Lewan impact is being felt.
I don't know how it came. 17 sacks in 3 weeks is the worst for any quarterback in two decades in the NFL. Mm-hmm. 2002 is the last time a quarterback has been sacked 17 times in three games. That's the worst start for a quarterback in two decades. So it clearly has to be laid at the feet of Taylor Lewan, some of this.
Didn't he get beat up yesterday? Last year?
Oh, but
hey, focus.
No, but
didn't he get beat up last year?
But teammates, don't tell that to the Titan fanboys out there with their podcasts and their blogs and their free Taylor shirts and the Bussin' with the Boys. And he's got all his buddies on doing a podcast. Stop sticking stuff in your body that's not acceptable. You cost your team two games.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
But
yeah,
then
I don't have a problem
these are the but people again. It's easy to point at Taylor Lewan because he's not on the team right now. But these were the same problems they were having last year with the offensive line and not being able to protect Marcus. And then Marcus doesn't help when he has wide open guys and he overthrow them and he just don't pull a trigger and throw the ball. So it's twofold. Yes, they need to protect better. But Marcus, when you do have protection, throw the ball. Squeeze it, grip it, and rip it.
Just watch the third quarter and don't watch any other football from last night and you'll be like, who is this quarterback? Like, dude was throwing it in the third quarter, and you're like, who is this guy? And I agree with you, Derek. It's the same problems they had last year, but you cannot argue that Lewan has not let the team down.
He has let the team down
because last night the game wasn't as close, in large part due to the first problem from Adoree Jackson. Uh-huh. and the rain. And by the way, let's give credit to Jacksonville's defensive line. They're really, really good, right? Calais Campbell just destroyed Ben Jones. So Taylor Lewan, does he fix that?
But,
I don't think so.
Right, but it's low-hanging fruit. And we can blame it on Taylor because Taylor's not here to defend himself. He's not here to be on the field to help out with this miserable offensive line. But these are the same problems that they were having last year with Taylor Lewan. Now, Taylor, I'm not saying Taylor was the problem because he played well. But these are the same problems they were having last year with Taylor Lewan as their left tackle. So I don't think things are just going to magically.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Change when they say, you know what, our best player on the team, he's back. Let's roll. This offense is going to go from, you know, turtle to cheetah in one big swoop. It's not.
Don't worry, Taylor Lewan fans. He'll tape another episode. Him and Will Compton will sit on the couch together and they'll do a little broadcast.
Well, maybe he and Dory Jackson could get together and do a podcast or
a simulcast.
And be more than just football. Give me a break.
I'm ready.
Who cares?
I'm ready for hockey. Let's go to
guys. It's three games. Chill out.
I know we're overreacting.
They were 1-3 last year.
We're
they
supposed
to
overreact the day before the game.
No. Jeremy Pruitt said we can't.
Oh yeah.
Jeremy Pruitt said we're not allowed to react on Fridays.
Monday, Wednesday,
Tuesdays.
Let me hear.
I mean, I don't have it up right now, man.
Monday, Wednesday.
Well, don't imitate
Thursday.
Him. Then.
Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday. I got you.
Yeah, Friday, we can't do Friday. Yeah.
I got too many guys with side ventures. My left tackle wants to be a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. My corner from USC is more worried about his entertainment career.
Well, I'm not going to jump down that avenue just yet because we don't know.
I think it's great, though.
There's part of me that wants to see players have interests outside of football. And does it affect him playing football? We don't know. Taylor Lewan said on his own show, I will not tape any episodes during the season.
And he hasn't.
When the season starts, it is completely – Bussing with the Boys is out of sight, out of mind. We are all completely focused on football. So I don't buy any of that. I don't buy that Adoree Jackson's problems are the fact that he interned with Warner Brothers during the offseason. My problem with Adoree Jackson is he doesn't look like he cares about being on the football field.
But guys, what guys got to understand this, it is because – you are on that field that's 52 yards wide, I believe, 53. Yeah, something like 54. That. 120 yards long, if you're calling the back of the end zones, 120 yards long. It is because you playing between that you are able to do some of those other things.
Sure.
Don't forget that. So if that is indeed the case, you need to continue to bust your ass and play the way you're supposed to play. Because none of that happens if you're not doing what you're supposed to do on the field.
Yep.
Don't fool yourself. Don't think. Don't sit here and try to be like Antonio Brown. I don't need football. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's getting worse by the day.
737-1025. Let's go to Keith. Keith, you're next on Morning Drive. You go ahead, Keith.
Good morning, fellas. Good morning. I totally agree with you guys, man. I just got to say a few things. So to me, it was an overall team play. It wasn't just the O-line. It wasn't just the coaching. It was an overall team play. It was a couple of things that I seen last night that I felt good about futuristically with the Titans. That the end of that third and that fourth on those hurry-up plays, man, like Marcus was hitting some throws downfield. They completed on third down. They was clicking. Now, when the bad part is, you had a swing pass to Henry. He dropped it. Wide open man blocking downfield. He dropped it. Bull rush on the goal line. Delaney Walker, the ball gets tipped. Delaney wide open. Marcus skittish. Hurry up and threw the ball. But just if he just took that little more time. But overall, man, I just thought it was sloppy on everybody's part. Because when the game's on the line, Henry needs to make that pass, to make that catch. The game's on the line. Marcus needs to take his time. If they had a complete, he should have kicked the field goal. Momentum changes. It builds for the team confidence. I'm going to let you guys go.
The goal line throw I'd like to ask you about, Derek, because I thought, you know, Marcus stepped up into the pocket, made a really good play to get himself in position to make the throw to a wide-open Delaney Walker. The linebacker jumps up and makes a great play, just grazes it with a finger. Do you give more credit to the linebacker on that play? Like, it wasn't like he missed Delaney. Mm-hmm. He was about to make a spectacular play, and – the linebacker made a good play to knock it down. Well, is that just football,
I mean,
at some point?
It's football, but Marcus, if you watch the throw, Marcus tried to make it a picture-perfect throw. There were other passes Marcus tried to make a perfect throw, and he threw it in the dirt. Marcus just hadn't learned yet to throw the guy open as opposed to throwing it to the guy. I've been saying this for years now. If you want to be a really good quarterback in the National Football League, and you see them, they throw their guys open. They don't throw it to them. Now, there are times where you have to fit it in the window and you throw it to them. But most of the time, it's, I'm going to throw you open. You run and get the ball. Only you can get it. Either you can turn it up or go, or you're going to get a first down. There were several situations where Marcus either didn't read it right, the receiver didn't read it right, Marcus didn't throw the receiver open. He was trying to throw a perfect pass. Marcus, you're not going to throw a perfect pass. Just throw the ball to where it's supposed to be thrown and trust. Just trust. And that's probably the part that he doesn't.
Well, Henry's drop passes this
year. Trust that the guys will go get it. The shallow cross to Corey Davis. I don't know if Corey Davis read that wrong or not, but Corey Davis saw it as zone. Marcus saw it as man. We have a problem.
Yeah.
Marcus threw it as if it was man defense. We were taught, if it's zone defense, do not look at the quarterback. Get to the spot and stop. If it's man defense, you're looking at the quarterback as you're going. Throw me to the ball. So to me, Corey Davis was not looking at Marcus, which means he thought it was zone. He stops. Marcus throws it as if it's man. Well, there's a safety sitting right there that he's going to get knocked out if he keeps running. So somebody read that wrong.
Yep.
And I think it might have been Marcus that read that wrong.
615-737-1025, the number. We'll come back. We'll get more calls in a little bit, but up next, our buddy Teron Davenport from ESPN just landed from Jacksonville here in Nashville. We'll talk to TD next on Morning Drive.
Thank you. That.
Morning Drive rolling on live here, Friday edition of the show, ESPN 1025 The Game. Live from Kitchen Notes, the Omni Nashville Hotel, as we welcome in our buddy Teron Davenport from ESPN. TD, safe travels. Glad to have you back. How you doing, pal?
Hey, what's going on, man? It's definitely safe travels. It's good to be back, sitting here in the airport now. Man, that's all you can say. Marquise played the right song, though. You know, straighten it out. That's what this team has to do.
All right, so I guess the question is on offense, because the defense played pretty well last night. On offense, what if you had to divvy up the blame here, right? Arthur Smith's predictable play calling, Marcus missing open receivers, the offensive line not blocking, not protecting, holding penalties, the receivers not getting open, sort of try to break down where you place the percentages of blame on that offensive performance last night.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to place the bulk of it on the offensive line this week. Calais Campbell, Josh Allen, they pretty much had their way. The Jaguars used the same stunt twice and got two sacks on it in a series of five plays. That can't happen, man. It can't. And these guys on the interior, and it was bad. Jack Conklin letting a rookie, you know, escort him like a bouncer. It can't happen, and I think that was the issue. Yeah, Marcus missed a couple throws, but Mariota made some throws also. And I got to say it, man. You got to respect the way he stood in that pocket. Despite all that pressure coming down, I mean, he had guys bearing down on him. He hit Delanie Walker on a couple third downs and converted. I mean, it's tough to put this one on Marcus. First half, that offense as a whole stunk. But, I mean, the guys up front, they got to do better, man. They cannot get violated the way they did last night. Calais Campbell, like I said, he had his way with it.
And Teron, this is sort of a microcosm of the problem here. And you just kind of, you said it. Well, I didn't put the blame on, you know, the bulk of the blame on Marcus, the offensive line. Played horribly. They hadn't been that good, frankly, the last couple of games. But Marcus, he shows you just a little bit, just enough to say, okay, we don't need to panic with Marcus. My thing is, after five, going into his fifth year, the stuff that I'm seeing, I should not be seeing anymore. So, whereas if it was year two, then yes. I'm not giving him credit anymore for standing in the pocket. He's a quarterback, NFL quarterback. He's getting paid $20 million. He needs to stand in the pocket. He knows the deal. But what I don't appreciate or what I can't give an excuse for is him missing wide open guys, not reading the defense, holding on to the ball when guys are open. That I just can't give him any more excuses.
No, that's inexcusable. And when you say missing wide open guys, I tell you one play that stood out to me, and I asked him about it afterwards. And it was when Corey Davis was running that crossing route, and he's kind of working through the zone, and he was open, and he throttled down, and Marcus overthrew him because he thought that he was going to continue to run through. And that's a gain that they needed. You know what I mean? And it just, you're right. He missed open receivers. The one to Delanie Walker, it looked like the ball got tipped. The first one in the red zone, it looked like it got tipped, but Walker was wide open. He did a good job climbing the pocket, but you got to find a way to get that over that defender and to your tight end for the touchdown. So, listen, you're not going to get any disagreement from me. I think he showed improvement from last week, but it's still not where it needs to be. And at some point, just like I said last week, your quarterback has to do something to elevate everyone around him and do something to win despite what's going wrong with other parts of the offense. And I don't think Marcus is that guy. And that's what I've been saying all along when people have been presenting this idea of him being a $100 million quarterback. He is not.
Teron, explain to me the mystery right now that is Adoree Jackson, whether it's the lack of confidence in coverage, you know, fumbling the punt return, and then twofold, why does Mike Vrabel continue to put him back there? Do they not have another guy competent enough to be adequate in the return game?
Listen, I didn't make it down to Vrabel's presser in time to get a question in, but that was the thing I wanted to talk about. Why on earth was Adoree back out there after muffing that punt? You finally, as a defense, it didn't happen the last 2 weeks. It happened yesterday. You finally forced the offense three and out. You don't let them score on the opening drive. And what do? You turn around and give the ball to them on the 7-yard line. Those are things that just can't happen. That's the second week in a row you had something that was done by Adoree Jackson to put the opposing team in scoring range. You can't be a double agent. You cannot make plays for your team and for the opposing team. And that's what he's done the last 2 weeks. He said that he was just trying to be aggressive and make a play. He wanted to catch it on the second hop, second bounce. And I get that, but you know that the surface is wet. You know that the ball is going to be slippery. I get trying to make a play, but, man, you have to secure the ball. You cannot muff it in that situation. And then he said he had the fair catch that he was going to make. He said he got water in his eye, and he said it wasn't an excuse, but that was why he pulled away from the fair catch. It can't continue to happen. Adoree should not be back there for another punt return for at least 4 games, if not for good. Put Adam Humphries back there. At least he's going to secure the football, and you're not going to have a turnover. But they have to figure out ways to get this field positioning thing situated, because they're not getting any plays from the punt return game.
No, you're absolutely right. They're not getting it. Frankly, they're not getting anything from Adoree Jackson. He's becoming more and more of a disappointment as a cornerback and definitely as a return man. This is a guy that I was high on coming out of college, and I just thought he had that it thing about him. And whatever that it thing was, he must have left it in Southern Cal, because he didn't bring it with him. The coaching staff as a whole, I think, other than Dean Pease, who week in and week out has his defense ready to play, what do you think of the coaching staff this game in particular? I just didn't think the team wasn't in it. I don't think, you know, the coaching staff, the head coach making, you know, going for it on 4th and 1, in the third quarter where you didn't have to, get some points. It just seems like the coaches for Thursday night games, they were not into it. Everybody except you know, the defensive guy.
Yeah, and that actually, I think that was 4th and 6 going for.
Yeah. Yep.
And my thing is this. Your offense is dying to score points. Kick the field goal. Get the points. And for me, they were lifeless, man. They were lifeless. The instant that punt was muffed by Adoree,
yep,
that team was that. They were done.
Yep.
And I don't know, man. This is the second week in a row this team came out onto the field and just they laid an egg from the start. I don't know what it is, you know, because me personally, if I have a bad performance, I'm going to be pissed off. Like, I'm going to be upset. And the next time I get the next opportunity I get to do it better, I'm going to do it better, or at least I'm going to mess up, but I'm going to mess up going 150%. And I'm not saying these guys were taking plays off or anything like that, but it's just there wasn't any energy. Somebody has to do something to spark this team. They need some type of big play. Something has to happen because they're lifeless. And that's really what they are. They are lifeless.
Maybe they need their biggest personality and best player on their team to come back onto the roster. That could be a possibility as well, Teron. Offensively, Arthur Smith is also not above reproach on this. I really thought he schemed well against Cleveland, against their weaknesses. It's basically been the same plays, though, I feel like, since week one. He hasn't really shown any evolution in 3 games. I know it's a small sample size, but it feels a little bit like a late 90s pro-style attack, and there hasn't really been a lot of evolution. Is that too early to say things like that? How much of the blame do you put on him from a predictability standpoint?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think it is it's a bit archaic, you know what I mean, to put it bluntly. But I want to see if this book is going to open up when LaJuan comes back. You know what I mean? That's what I want to see. Fortunately, they were able to get Humphreys involved. But, again, it goes back to you got Corey Davis out there. I think you have to find ways to get him the football. You have other coordinators that feature their playmaker like that. They draw up different ways just to get him touching and get him involved, and that's not happening, and that's an issue. It can't happen. So, I mean, I don't want to give Arthur Smith an excuse. I do want to say that I want to see how this thing changes once LaJuan comes back, but that's not until week 5. Week 4, next week, they're going to have to get together, because if they do not, if they show up the way they did these last couple weeks, the Falcons, they're going to run them right out that building.
TD, good stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate the time.
No problem. Thank you.
Teron Davenport, Titans reporter for ESPN. Hey, Smashville, join the game Nashville at the second annual Preds Fest on Sunday, September the 29th, 2 to 6 p.m. Preds player appearances, live entertainment, a used equipment sale, and fun for the whole family. Stop by the tent and win some awesome prizes and 102.5 The Game gear. Speaking of the Predators, if you want to wash out that sour taste in your mouth from the Titans, we've got a nice little double dip of hockey for the next 24 hours. The Preds are in Tampa Bay tonight, 6 o'clock puck drop on 102.5 The Game. And then they will fly right back here to Nashville as Tampa Bay will come back for the second half of a home-and-home tomorrow at 7 here on 102.5 The Game. We'll come back, try to make you some money. Our buddy Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports will join us after this on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.